Musician Charles Lloyd, Thursday, April 9 at the Clinton Street Theater. Arrows into Infinity takes us on Lloyd's journey from the heights of jazz rock royalty to his life in seclusion and back again. Arrows into Infinity, the Portland premiere, Thursday, April 9, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton, Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Every Monday night at 8 o'clock, you can hear this voice alerting you that
you are about to cross the border.
And then follow the footsteps to a two-hour-long sustained environment of uninterrupted sonic art or new electronic, experimental, or postmodern music. Audio that breaks and rewrites the rules to create entirely new worlds of sound. Where will you be on Mondays at 8 when the door slams shut? Here on KBOO Portland.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. Earlier this month, Partnership for Safety and Justice held their lobby day at the Capitol in Salem, Oregon. PSJ members met with their legislators to discuss support for continued justice reinvestment efforts to ensure adequate service levels for victims of domestic violence and to lobby for EARN review for Oregon youth. Tonight you'll hear my interviews with Executive Director Jane Downing with Salem Center for Hope and Safety and with two moms of teens who faced Measure 11 charges. But first, Andy Coe, the new Executive Director of Partnership for Safety and Justice, talked about his new position with PSJ and Lobby Day.
So I started on July 14th, Bastille Day, which was kind of appropriate, I guess. I had come from the Open Society Foundations, and I managed the campaign for a new drug policy there. And drug policy, I've been doing drug policy since 2001, and I did most of it at the ACLU. First the ACLU of Washington, and then I was at the National ACLU doing drug policy work. So that was sort of the natural lead into the foundation work that I did, of course, but then also into PSJ. And I've known PSJ for years, actually. When I was at the ACLU, and Bridget Sarabi and Kathleen Pequeño and Scott Nakagawa and all that crew were running the Western Prison Project, I had quite a bit of contact with them, so I knew and respected the organization a lot. And then I followed along as it was developing its new approach to the work, focusing mostly on Oregon, and then also bringing the victims' rights portion of the work that we do. And it's groundbreaking work. It's the work that's being emulated around the country, and just the opportunity to come and work at PSJ was just about perfect. So I packed up my family. We moved from New York City back to the West, and here we are.
So this is your first lobby day with Partnership for Safety and Justice?
It is. So I'm a lawyer by training, so I've been doing advocacy work either through litigation or lobbying since 1989. So I have a little bit of a history doing that. This is my first day with PSJ, and it's lobby day, and it's quite an operation. They told me that this is the sort of one of the signature events of PSJ during the year, and people have talked about it and for quite some time, and it's fascinating to see it in action. I know we're doing it a little bit differently this year, but it's fantastic.
And what are some of the issues that we're discussing with our legislators today?
Well, we have three main ones that we're focusing on. And obviously, PSJ, since we are an organization that wants the criminal justice system to work for everyone, victims, the families of victims, people who have committed crimes and the families of people who have committed crimes, as well as the general public, of course. But of course, you also have to focus during the legislative session. It's a time-limited time. So we have three main issues. The big one is justice reinvestment. So in 2013, Oregon passed House Bill 3194, which was an attempt to reduce sentences on some level, to reduce the intakes of people into the prison system. And by doing that, not only to use prison in a more wise fashion, but also to save resources. And so those saved resources are intended to then be put back into prevention programs as well as services for crime victims. In the first year that it was funded, and this was just 1 year of the previous biennium, $15 million were allocated. This year, the Criminal Justice Commission, the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission, estimated that cost avoidance and savings in terms of not opening another prison and not opening another wing of a prison, that we had saved about $58.5 million. And that was the recommendation to put into justice reinvestment. So the prior governor had actually put that into his proposed budget. Since then, the Joint Ways and Means Committee in the legislature had reduced their recommendation down to $20 million. We don't believe that's enough, so we're back here to request the full amount that the Criminal Justice Commission had recommended based on their own research, and that's $58.5 million. Our second priority for this session is to increase services for victims of domestic and sexual violence up to $10 million. So this is an addition $6 million, I believe, on top of the existing funding. Right now, only 25% of the requests for services for domestic and sexual violence victims are met. So it's a hugely undermet need. And this is just still just a drop in the bucket. But that means that additional number of people who are at risk of grave harm, possibly death, are actually going to be served. The last one is what's called earned review for juveniles. So earned review is an attempt to acknowledge when youth have actually done the work that they need within the Oregon Youth Authority to actually function well in society. It also recognizes that incarceration does not make better people, and that when young people can be out in society in a safe way, in a way that actually is not going to pose a safety risk to anyone, and in fact is in their own best interest, that they can actually be released to society and actually functioning after, with services, of course. And that's, again, this circles us back. This is the loop back to justice reinvestment, because the services that will be in the community at the community level would be services that would be serving them as well.
So is this earn review, will that include Measure 11?
It cannot without a supermajority. And this is the sticky part about Measure 11, right? Is that along with Measure 11, there was Measure 10, which actually required that Measure 11 be only amended by the legislature by a supermajority. So you have to have a two-thirds vote. And as you know, the Oregon State Legislature, even though it's a democratically controlled legislature right now, it's not by a lot. There is not a supermajority vote, at least along party lines. So it has to be bipartisan effort. If they were to pass earned review for youth without the supermajority, it would only apply to the non-Measure 11 cases. Measure 11 would actually require a supermajority. At least we believe that's what the sort of the legal analysis is right now. So without the supermajority, it would not apply to Measure 11 youth. With a supermajority, it would. It could. It could actually overturn the mandatory minimums and allow for a reduced time in incarceration. It's a huge number of people who are incarcerated will get out. You know, they're not going to stay in prison. So the question is they come out in a good way or they come out in a bad way? And as I said before, incarceration doesn't make better people. I mean, I know the rhetoric around that has been different over the last 20 or 30 years, but it doesn't make better people. What, you know, it makes people who only know how to survive in a particular culture, in a particular micro society. That is not the society that we want on the outside, right? So when people come out, you have to make sure that they can have the services that they need and the help that they need even to survive in the broader society. And we should all want that, because we all want to be safe. And continuing to punish people after they've been released to prison, after they've accounted for the crime that they committed, doesn't serve anyone's best interest.
And this is where the justice reinvestment dollars in our communities and our counties come in.
The structure of it's interesting. So of the amount, 10% will go to crime victims, specifically domestic violence and sexual violence. So that is allocated and dedicated to crime victims. So any reduction in that reduces services for crime victims. It's also the counties apply for the money. So the counties are pulling that money into their local jurisdictions where they know the lay of the land, they know the people who need the services, they have the resources or need to build up the infrastructure in order to deliver the services in those communities. So it's not the state deciding where the money goes. It's the counties themselves applying for it, pulling it into their counties. The other thing is it makes jobs as well. It's a job creation thing. in a county that's an enormous county but with a tiny little population, to actually pull a little bit of money in for services has a huge impact. So that's the way it's structured right now. Makes a lot of sense, but you still have to have the dollars there.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you.
Jane Downing is Executive Director of Salem's Center for Hope and Safety. She talked about funding for victims of domestic violence. So I'm here with Jane Downing, Center for Hope and Safety in Salem, Oregon. So you just spoke at PSJ's 2015 Lobby Day about community-based victim services. What are the issues?
Well, during this legislative session, of course, we are hoping to receive some funding from the Justice Reinvestment. 10% goes to community-based victim services. We also, of course, need the funding of the Oregon Domestic and Sexual Violence Services Fund, which is providing services all across the state of Oregon. And then there are several bills that we're following regarding these issues that are really important this session.
And is that funding in jeopardy this biennium?
It's not necessarily in jeopardy. The 10% from the Justice Reinvestment Act is actually new funding for us. And so that will... Right now, the co-chair's budget is just more than cutting that in half. And so we're hoping that that's really going to be go back to the level that the governor recommended. And so that will really be meaningful for our programs. And the Oregon Domestic and Sexual Violence Services Fund is general fund money. So it's always at risk every time the session comes in. And so we're just trying to do our best not only to protect it, but to talk about the need for our services so they can actually increase that funding.
And talk about the need.
Well, last year, to our program alone, and we're just one program in the state of Oregon, but in our program, we had more than 20,000 contacts from individuals, anywhere from I need shelter, and we house hundreds that come into our shelter every year, on our crisis line that's in English and Spanish, and in the schools, in support groups. I mean, we're just providing a number of services out there in trying to make sure that victims and survivors know that we're there and can come to us.
And you talked about some of the services that you are engaged in at the Center for Hope and Safety, including going into the McLaren Youth Facility. Talk about some of those services that you provide.
Absolutely. We have actually gone into all of the institutions for youth, even outside of our county. We've been asked to come in, and our youth services coordinator and then part of our Men for Hope and Safety group, they go together. A man and a woman go together and talk to youth about oppression, talk to them about sexism, homophobia, racism, all those different kinds of things to say, you know, yes, you've committed a crime, but here's how you can change your life to be meaningful and to make sure that we're talking about all those oppressions that violence keeps in place. And so it's trying to have a new paradigm for these individuals, and it's been an amazing program and highly successful. They've asked us to keep coming in and keep having these groups because the youth really respond to that, understanding those oppressions and how they can not grow up to be violent against other people in the future.
And what other services do you want to provide or don't have the funding to provide?
Right now, we have a youth services coordinator who kind of focuses on teens, and we really need children's services. It's an absolute critical thing in our shelter. About one half to two thirds of our shelter residents every year are children, and we don't have the funding to be able to do that. We don't have legal advocates who can go alongside someone. We're in there helping with protection orders all the time, but we don't have anybody who focuses on that, and those are two really big things for me. We actually need a new shelter. Our shelter has been running since 1978 and is really old, and we need a bigger one because we have so many folks coming to us. So there's lots of different things that we could really use some funding for that will make a huge difference for victims and survivors.
Thank you so much, Jane.
Thank you.
Oh, baby, I'm just human. Don't you know I have faults like anyone? Sometimes I find myself alone regretting some little foolish thing, some simple thing that I've done. I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
If you just tuned in, this is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland, and you're listening to interviews at Partnership for Safety and Justice Lobby Day, held earlier this month at the Capitol in Salem, Oregon. I spoke with Adrian and Anna, two mothers whose teens faced Measure 11 charges. As a result of their teens' involvement with the criminal justice system, both mothers have become outspoken advocates against Oregon's mandatory minimum sentencing law, Measure 11. What is your interest here at PSJ's Lobby Day today?
My main interest today is the earned review. I really think that Oregon youth, they need to be held accountable when they commit a crime, like a Measure 11. However, people need to know that they have the potential to succeed. So an earned review would give them an opportunity to get out of the prison walls and back into the community, still being supervised when they've proven that they've had a change of heart, that they've learned some new skills, and that they've done everything they've been asked to do inside of the prison. So I'm here to advocate with my legislators about the earned review, which is called a second look for OYA youth that do not have a mandatory sentence.
And do you have a personal interest in Measure 11?
Absolutely. One, I'm a community member, and I was an uninformed community member until Measure 11 hit my home. And now that it's hit my home, I see how hard it is for families that may not have the education or may not have the skill set to advocate for their child. And so I'm digging deeper, not only to help my son, but to help other people's sons and daughters. And our community, those that are not in these prison walls, because I wouldn't have expected this to happen in my family. And it's just spreading. So I want to put a stop to it.
Talk about the sentencing of your loved one.
Well, it's interesting. They try to give for a first offense, they try to give you like 5 to 7 years, and we're thinking that's absolutely not going to happen. He's just going to get probation. This is the first time. When we get to the end of this whole arduous process with the public defender, it's like they're going to try and give my child 4 years for something he did as a 15-year-old with his brain not fully developed. So we ended up having to get an attorney. That's a lot of money to get a reputable attorney that has enough pull to make a difference in the courtroom. So we got 2 additional years off of our son's charge. So he's going to be in there less than 2 years, which is 2 years too long. However, there are children in there that have to do 5 years for stealing a cell phone. Should they have stole someone's cell phone? Absolutely not. But 5 years in prison? That I don't see the rehabilitative nature of that at all.
And did you know about Oregon's mandatory minimum sentencing before your loved one got involved with the criminal justice system?
I am ashamed to say that no, I do not. And after researching more, I may have voted for it, you know, thinking that it was something else than what it was. It wasn't meant to capture all these young men doing these silly 15-year-old property crimes. It wasn't meant for them. I think it was meant for adults, is what I was told. But it somewhere in all of the little fine print, it trickled down to our babies. And that's what they are. They're babies. They're silly babies, I will admit that, but they're babies, and there's a better way.
So, Adrian, you've gotten a lot more involved with this issue. Tell us about some of the other things you are doing around mandatory minimum sentencing and support groups.
Well, of course, with PSJ, when I was just struggling to try and wrap my head around what was going on with my son, I found out about PSJ, and that's what brought me to Lobby Day last year and this year as well. The juvenile facility where my son was, there were some other parents like me that really wanted to advocate for our children. And they started holding these Measure 11 orientations. And we got an opportunity to meet some of the higher ups in OYA, and they wanted to create a family advisory council. So the Oregon Youth Authority Family Advisory Council is being formed as we speak, where we work with staff so they can get an idea about better practices for family engagement. So we're telling them, this is what it feels like to us, this is what we need to know, et cetera, et cetera. And we're trying to formulate some best practices so that when new families come in, they don't have to be as afraid as we are. They don't have to be as uninformed as we are. We can tell them, you know, right out of the gate, this is what you have to expect. This is what you need to do in order for you, your family, and your child to be successful while they're here. And we're really excited about the support we're getting from the agency to really listen to us and really understand that we know our kids better than you do. We need your help, you need our help. Let's work together. This is a very new process with the Oregon Youth Authority, so we're trying to get a website up so people can get more information on how they can support us and support them, because this is really a community effort.
What were some of the needs that you found as a parent when your loved one, when your son got involved with the Oregon Youth Authority?
They have these multidisciplinary team meetings where parents are supposed to be involved and engaged, and parents have told us that they'll get a call that's a half an hour before the meeting. They're in Portland, the meeting's in Salem, and they're just, it's just like basically, oh, well, we'll tell you what happened. And that's not okay, because they're team planning and forecasting for their child's future. So the policy needs to change on that. So there is no multidisciplinary team meeting if the parent is not involved and engaged.
So this is one of the issues that you will be addressing.
Yes, that's a huge issue that we will be addressing, because that happens quarterly in order to get your child ready to reenter society.
And I'm here with
Anna.
And you're at the Partnership for Safety and Justice Lobby Day. And what is your interest in Lobby Day?
Their earned review. I have an incarcerated daughter.
How would earned review help your incarcerated daughter?
Well, at 15 years of age, she was sentenced to 15 years in prison, and earned review would get her kind of like a second look, half her time, to see how productive she's become or how she might be able to be presented back into the community, or if she's a threat at all, or it would be a blessing, actually.
So she is serving 15 years currently?
Yes.
So I'm assuming it's a mandatory minimum sentencing?
Measure 11, yes.
So what are you telling your legislators here today at Lobby Day?
I'm asking if they would find a way or take another look at doing the earned review for these youths. I mean, a lot of these youths don't even have a chance before they even get incarcerated. And
explain that. What do you mean they don't have a chance before they become incarcerated?
I mean, like for me personally, I have my daughter, she's gone through a lot of things, had a lot of things happen to her, and I have sought probably every single mental health agency that Oregon even has in the city of Portland. She has had like a really bad drug and alcohol problem. I've tried so much. I mean, and it's just like everybody was either like, they can't help us right now, or we'll see what we could do, or a conflict of interest. And it just, that's all we ever got from all these agencies. And I don't know, and a lot of people are like, well, we can't help you until she commits a crime. So here she is at 15 years in prison now. So I don't know, this earned review, it could help her get a second chance at life earlier than expected. She's really come along and done really great things now that she's finally had a chance to sit back for the last 3 years and find out who she is and graduate high school and get her diploma, and she got her GED. She's on her way to college. She's got college credits. And
this all occurred while she was incarcerated?
At Oregon Youth Authority, yes.
What was missing in the community? What services could have helped your daughter stay out of prison?
Well, she really had a really bad drug and alcohol problem, and just hanging around the wrong type of people, mainly a lot of older people, like grown adults. But her main thing was she had a severe drug and alcohol problem, and I would think that the year before she was incarcerated, she was in laying in a hospital bed because she overdosed like every other month, and no But I would think that that would show people that this child needs help, but there isn't any help. They say the state of Oregon now no longer has detox for youth because of liability. So what do these kids do? I guess they just do what my daughter had been doing, just go to a hospital, stay there for a day or two, and then you're let out onto the street.
So she is doing much better since being incarcerated.
Yeah, but the thing is that she will be able to stay at Oregon Youth Authority till she's 25. After, I mean, she would be there for 10 years. They're able to find themselves and be productive. And after that 10 years is when I get worried, is because she'll have to do another 5 in upstate, like a regular prison, and all that stuff that she learned in everything that she learned in Oregon Youth Authority. I mean, 5 years in an adult prison, that's just probably going to be thrown out the window. I mean, it's a totally different type of prison than Oregon Youth Authority.
So once she ages out of the Oregon Youth Authority, she goes to the adult prison to serve the remainder of her sentence. Is that correct?
Yeah, another additional 5 years at Coffee Creek. So, I mean, I just think that if these children or youth have become able to live amongst society with no threat to other people, I just think that they deserve to have a second chance. Like,
and right now, under the mandatory minimum sentence, she'll have to serve day for day her entire 15 years. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, with the deals that the DA gives these children, she could have good time, but that's only, I think it's 8 months to a year, but she has to serve like 13 and a half, 14 years of her sentence. So, I mean, that's not much of anything there.
So she'll be 30 years old when she releases?
Yes.
So, Anna, talk about what else that you have done personally around this issue.
Okay, well, after my daughter, well, she was actually in Portland. She was staying at Donald D. Long home before all her sentencing and that. And they had just started this Measure 11 group. And I have gone to every single one of their Measure 11 groups at Donald D. Long. And they are every other month. I have met some tremendously amazing incarcerated youths that are still incarcerated at Donald D. Long, and they tried to teach these young children there, don't walk that way of life. Try, you know, just go do what you have to do to make yourself better. I have also, and I didn't know what, they have this thing as Oregon Youth Authority Advisory Council, which I never really knew what that was about. And everybody kept saying, you need to come and check this out. You need to come and see what it's all about and what's going on. And so I went one day, and I am now on their sitting with the Oregon Youth Authority Advisory Council. I am the only parent of an incarcerated female youth. I'm here not only just for my child. I want to make sure that all of our children get a chance. I am the only mother of an incarcerated female youth that sits on the Oregon Youth Authority Advisory Council.
What is the work of the Advisory Council?
Well, they meet every month, and they talk about the things that are going on in all the Oregon Youth Authority facilities, what they could do to make it better. Like there right now, they're trying to help parents with transportation issues who might have difficulties getting back and forth to a facility, to make sure that these children, every single one of them, are being treated equally and fairly, whether it's like their cultural beliefs, I mean, they just do all kinds of different things for these youth.
And who is this advisory group made up of? Is it all parents?
Well, actually, they're mainly a lot of parents. And there is, I think they have some parole officers. I believe there was a DHS worker. There's people, I mean, more and more as they go along, there's more people coming to this advisory council saying, hey, I want to be a part of that. And I mean, they have different people from all different walks of life that are on this board or coming to join on this advisory council.
How receptive was your legislator today when you talked to your legislator about earned review?
Oh my gosh, she was great. She was like pretty shocked to hear like a lot of things that are going on and with this law that these kids are getting these huge sentencing, and that there's no, you know, when these people, like adult goes to a prison, they go up in front of a parole board. These kids, they don't get that chance. They have to do the whole sentence before. I mean, that's just ridiculous. Why do these kids have to sit here for so long and don't get a chance to have a second look? And these adult offenders are, they're getting to go home.
What is your daughter missing being incarcerated at age 15?
When she was first incarcerated, I thought so many thoughts went through my head. She never really got a chance to be a child, but young girls do. I don't know, go hang out with their friends or go shopping with their friends or go through high school, graduate, you know, with their own class, proms, family events, birthdays, Christmas, everything. They miss it all, everything.
You have been listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. You can listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thank you to our wonderful engineers, Danielle and Mike. Good night.
Ear to the streets. Check out Ear to the Streets of Portland with hosts Sequoina
and Kayla
every first and third Thursday of the month starting at 7 o'clock p.m.
Listen in as we interview community organizers, speak on issues focused on Black Portland, and share community events happening in the area and elsewhere.
Listen on the radio at 90.7 FM, online at www.kbu.fm, or from your mobile phone at m.kbu.fm.
Follow KBU on Instagram at KBU Radio. Ear to the Streets.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it is KBOO's evening broadcast of Hard Knock Radio, so stay tuned.